I am fired up to announce that this episode of The Huddle is brought to you by SeatGeek. Now, I've been really hesitant to bring on a sponsor to the show, but this was an absolute no-brainer. SeatGeek is by far and away the best and easiest way to get tickets to any event anywhere, sports, concerts. Jesus, if DeMarcus Cousins had a hair shirt fashion show, I'm sure that SeatGeek could get you in. If you want to go, they'll get you there. Just download the SeatGeek app. Look up the event you want to roll to and buy the ticket. They're always honest and upfront about the price. No shady added fees like StubHub, and they stand behind every single one of their tickets. So, if you buy from them, you know that you got a ticket that is guaranteed to work at the best possible price. Also, they have been hooking up Huddle listeners. So, if you download the app, you go to the settings tab on that, enter the promo code GSW in all caps. You'll get $20 off the first purchase, man. SeatGeek is the way to go. Great seats. Great prices, no BS.
It's kind of crazy the way everything happened. And I was at home and didn't know what was going to happen with me. And all of a sudden, I'm here with the Golden State Warriors. So I'm very excited to be here. I'm very excited for the opportunity. I got to know the guys a little bit tonight. It's a fun group.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And joining us, per usual, the San Francisco Chronicle's beat writer for the Golden State Warriors and a guy who has an emotional attachment to the jocularity in the celebrity game during All-Star Weekend, Rusty Simmons. What's going on, Rusty?
I want to go back to All-Star Weekend instead of driving on this Florida tollway right now. Toronto, even at 8 degrees, sounds better.
Yeah, so where do we find you, man? Where is this conversation taking place on your end?
I'm in more stop-than-go traffic in the middle of afternoon in Florida. I'm not sure where all these people are trying to go, but unfortunately, I'm trying to go the same place.
Living that sexy lifestyle of a beat writer, huh? I guess it's not all private planes left and right. You still have to deal with traffic as well, huh?
Well, part of this is my own fault. Because of my days of covering Cal and flying into Pullman and Corvallis and such, I'm deathly afraid of prop planes, and I refuse to fly from Miami to Orlando.
Oh, a little John Madden in you, huh? I never knew about that.
Oh, I respect it. If I get on a plane and I can touch both sides if I stretch out my arms and I'm touching both sides of the plane, I'm getting off that plane. And the concept of it being a prop plane, I'm real cool with, too. Leave that to, like, Indiana Jones, man. I'm with you for sure.
The scary thing about it is when they, there's somebody just stopped in the middle of the road for fun. The scary thing about it is when there's a 170-pound person and them moving from the right side to the left side of the plane is going to impact the plane so much that they ask them to move. That's scary to me. If 170 pounds means whether I live or die, I don't want to be on that plane.
I would drive in traffic, too. Enough about your commute. Let's jump in, man. Let's start off with the insider's report, and I want to start here. We all knew it was coming. It was inevitable, but it finally happened last night. Steph tied Kyle Korver for the most three-pointers made in consecutive games. He's at 127. What does that record mean to him? Do these kind of accolades stick out, or is he more of a team-focused guy?
It's funny, whenever one of these things comes about, as he gets closer to it, he decides he wants it and faces it. He already held the record for most consecutive games, including playoffs. He already held the record for most consecutive games on the road. But when we told him about Kyle Korver's streak about a year ago, he thought it was impossible. He heard 127 and was like, oh, nobody can do that. That thing's going to stand forever. And then, yeah, you're right. As he got close to it, it became inevitable that he was going to break it. And he may set it at such a number that nobody ever sniffs it again. But once he got close, he wanted it. And I think he'll probably celebrate a little bit today when he breaks the record in Orlando.
I loved how early he went for it, too. I mean, it was the first shot of the game, and he forced it. You know what I mean? Like, it was like a maybe 28, 29-footer. For him, that's a makeable shot. But there was no question in my mind he was going to tie that record immediately. I mean, that was definitely one of his game goals, yeah?
Yeah, no, it reminded me a lot of 2013 when he and Clay were trying to break the all-time record for the duo in three-pointers, and Mark Jackson had told them their last regular season game they only had a quarter. They were going to sit out the rest of the game, and so those two guys just came out jacked, and they were going for the record. And that's the way Steph is. I don't think he's always aware of these things, 50 games out or so, but once he gets close, he decides he wants it, he's going to get it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm bringing this up a little bit selfishly because I wanted to set up this next point. So by my count, Steph is now, you know, best player in the league, the MVP, seemingly on his way to a back-to-back MVP season, maybe the best player on the greatest team in NBA history, and yet and still, last night, Josh Richardson, a rookie and little-known player, is riding him up and down the court, and he can't get any calls. And it's mind-blowing to me. I don't understand why the hell this guy has not deserved the type of calls that Jordan used to get. Let me start by asking the obvious. Am I making this up, or can Steph still not get the calls that he deserves?
I think you're right. I think for a number of reasons, that he's a superstar. He doesn't seem to get those calls. He's one of the smallest guys on the court. Those guys usually seem to get way more calls than the bigger guys. There's a ton of reasons why you would think he would get calls, and for some reason he does not. And in his way, you can even see that he's complaining about it a little bit now. Just short of cussing, but he is getting mad that things aren't going his way right now.
What is his relationship, generally speaking, with the referees? Because I have seen him talking a little more to refs than he normally does. But he does it, to me, it looks like it's actually a very, like, polite way. Do you think it's not effective? Do refs like him, or do they have it out for him, and that's why he's not getting any calls?
No, I think officials like him. He learned early on from Corey Maggette that it was important to learn officials' names and to be respectful and to know their families. And Steph knows that about all these guys. And for most of the time, he'll wait until a foul shot is being taken or a timeout happens and off camera goes off the official. And then he doesn't cuss. You'll see there are times that he's trying to get it technical, but it's hard to do when you don't curse at a guy. So I think he has a good relationship with him. I can't figure out exactly why he doesn't get called. The only thing that I might bring up is that when he was a younger player, he would do everything he could to avoid contact. He still is such a crafty finisher, but he takes a lot of contact now. But I think that he might be still seen as a player who avoids contact. So when officials would normally predict that he was going to get hit when he was going into the lane, they now predict that he won't. They'll find some way to avoid the contact.
I think I may have identified the only place on earth I might actually be able to help Steph Curry. So let me go ahead and do this now. To all the refs who may or may not be listening to this, this is f***ing bullshit. This is unbelievable. I have no problem swearing about it. Someone needs to recognize what he means not to this team, not to the league, but to the sport itself, and start protecting him, because it is absolutely ridiculous. Unless it was Josh Richardson's father wrestling last night, I'm not sure what the hell is going on.
I would suggest that he should grow a beard and start throwing his head back more.
It may work. You know what we also finally got last night was Whiteside v. Draymond. Although it wasn't really the all-game matchup that we were hoping for. It was more Bogut on Whiteside, and they were using Draymond that 1-5 the way they normally do. But how would you guys score the round? Who won the first round of that fight last night?
Well, you want to say Draymond because the Warriors won. But I thought the Warriors showed Hassan Whiteside a ton of respect. They played him almost always with a big, either Bogut or Varejao. They, like Whiteside said in his tweet, that if he played against Draymond Green, he would have a light double-double. The Warriors seemed to respect that, didn't match him up much. In fact, because of the way things were going, Miami didn't start Hassan Whiteside in the first half, and the Warriors expected that they wouldn't start him in the second half. So the Warriors were ready to start with their small lineup, Brandon Rush, so that when Whiteside came in, they could match Bogut up with him. They clearly respect Whiteside, and that surprised me.
Well, I thought that was, I mean, in terms of Whiteside versus Draymond Green, that was Whiteside with a KO. Do not hold back. Whiteside had a double-double. I don't know how many blocks he had. I mean, it was damn near close to a triple-double with the blocks. I mean, he destroyed Draymond.
I'll answer that. What I thought it was is a perfect illustration of their two styles. Whiteside is all sizzle. So did he have numbers on the page? Absolutely. Did he have that big alley-oop? Did he have some blocks? He did. There's no question. What Draymond is substance. They won. Best play, I think, that kind of sums up the game. Towards the end, they needed a three. Draymond takes it from the top of the key, and Hassan Whiteside blocks it. Very flashy play. Very exciting. Instead of giving up on it, Draymond then couples it, gets the ball to Steph, sets a bone-crushing three that opens up Steph for a dagger that ends the game. So even though that screen itself won't find its way onto the score page, there's no question it was a winning play and shows the difference between what Draymond can contribute and what Whiteside can contribute.
Hold on, though. But if you just limit it to you had only the only time you had seen Whiteside play and Draymond Green play was last night's game, you would choose Whiteside on your team.
Are you telling me or are you asking me? No, I would not. I would stick with Draymond. Help us, Resi. Where are you on this?
I think you just heard your argument, Brent, when you described that play. Draymond Green took a shot that he was going to miss, got it blocked, and got saved by Stephen Curry, who made a miraculous shot to win it. Draymond Green is allowed to talk trash the way he does because he's got the best player in the world playing alongside him. A lot of times he backed up his own trash talk, but last night he did not. He was not ready to play. He was not ready to go against somebody like Scott Whiteside. Draymond was not very good.
Jesus, Rusty, you haven't even seen Scott for like 6 weeks. I mean, let alone talk, and now you're basically blowing him to support his case. It is what it is. Both of you guys are stupid or wrong. Let's just go ahead and move on and talk about the addition of Anderson Varejao. Excuse me. Last week, Rusty and I were thinking that it may be Roy Hibbert. Looks like we may have been a little bit off. The Cavs bought out Anderson Varejao, or I'm sorry, Cavs traded Varejao to Portland. Portland bought him out, and the Warriors signed him. He's a 33-year-old, 6'11", 233-pound.
You want to start over and just get his name right before you mess up all of
What are you talking about? How did I mess up the name? And go ahead. How do I say Anderson Varejao?
Varejao.
What are you, like Portuguese? I'm close enough. Either way, he is 33 years old, 273 pounds, and just a ball of energy and effort. What do you guys think of the ad?
I hope it gets better than it did last night. He was terrible last night. Couldn't guard anybody. As you would expect, he looked a little bit lost on offense. But what scared me the most, if I'm a Warriors fan, is that he didn't call out screens. So a couple of times, Steph Curry just ran right into his shoulder. So that's just normal basketball. It doesn't matter if he's not used to being around his guys. He should be able to do that kind of stuff. If I'm a Warriors fan, I hope that there's not a reason why he wasn't playing for Cleveland and why they wanted to get rid of him. I hope he gets a lot better.
I love this pickup. Varejao has always been a guy who I wanted on my team, and I'm very happy to have him now. I do think he's a little banged up. But the comparisons to Bogut, I think, are really accurate. And you saw it last night in the way that he set screens. I thought it was very Bogut-esque. I think he's also a very good passing big man, so he'll fit in good as a backup center. And I did notice the one thing he doesn't do that Bogut does is talk on defense and really communicate to his players. Because I saw what you're talking about, Rusty. That's going to have to change.
I think the first thing he should do is change his first name to Kwali. I mean, why the hell not? It would be perfect. I do love the addition. It's a no-risk ad. I mean, if he doesn't work out, I'm sure he will. Who cares? It's a one-year minimum. He's already contributed more than Jason Thompson. So, you know, there literally is no downside to this addition. And it's just another piece, another sign of how far this team has come. I can remember when Ronnie Cicely played for the Warriors and they wanted to re-sign him. And he said, look, if you re-sign me, I will go back to my war-torn country and just play there instead of staying here in Golden State. Fast forward to now, and Varejao feels like he's won the lottery by coming here. So, you know, it just illustrates how things have changed. And if all we're asking the guy to do is give us energy and defense off the bench, he'll be able to figure that out. As far as how complicated the Warriors system is, Rusty, how long do you think it takes to pick this thing up? When can we expect this guy to really contribute?
It's complicated. It's a free-flowing thing, and there are a bunch of counters off counters. But as Scott mentioned, he's a really good passer. He's got an innate feel for the game. And as the hub of the offense, top of the key, all he has to do is read when guys are going to make backdoor cuts, when they're going to go the opposite way and head to the three-point line. So I think it should be a little bit easier for a big guy to learn the offense, especially the way the Warriors are playing right now. There are games where they call a play maybe only six or eight times. Most of those are out of a timeout hub. So he should be fine. He should pick this all up if he's healthy. That's my one worry with him. I think he's averaged something like 34 games a year since 2011, so he hasn't been healthy very often.
wasn't that the main criticism of Jason Thompson, was that he couldn't pick up the Warriors system and just never kind of had his head wrapped around what they're trying to do? That to me made it seem like the Warriors do run some type of complicated system that may take somebody a while to pick up. Am I wrong about that?
I thought the main concern about Jason Thompson is that he sucked.
Well, no, you're right on. He never did pick up the system. But he was playing, although he was playing 4-5, he was playing a very different version of it than Varejao. Like Scotty said, Varejao is going to play it similarly to the way that Bogut does, where he's at the top of the key doing dribble handoffs and making passes to backdoor cutters. What they were trying to do with Jason Thompson was more of what they do with Festus Feely, where he's a rim runner and pick and roll and dives to the rim and those kind of things. He just wasn't picking it up. And it's a hard thing. The Warriors themselves in the second year are remarkably better at the offense than they were last year, just because there are so many counters and counters off counters. So I don't think it demeans Jason Thompson that much that he couldn't pick it up in half the year. It's a difficult offense when it's running right and when you're playing that position. But Varejao's playing, going to play a different position than Jason Thompson.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Did the Warriors do anything to welcome Varejao in? For instance, I saw that Jeff Green got traded to the Clippers, and in his first game when he came out during the starting lineup or whatever, the Clippers kind of, they jumped him into the gang almost. Like, they were kind of all like fake beating him up as if it was some type of initiation type deal. Did the Warriors do anything either like that or anything to kind of bring him into the fold?
Did they fake beat him in, Rusty?
No, it was the opposite. He didn't get any gang violence or anything.
Weird.
He wanted to be part of the team. So as players came in the locker room in Atlanta, he stood by the door and greeted each one. And Draymond Green obviously always hangs out for a little bit longer, so he waited 5 minutes by the door and hugged him when he came in. Then all the team made fun of Varejao as he stood by the door longer, and nobody understood what he was doing, and he waited and waited and waited, and finally Curry came in and hugged all over him. And then once all the Warriors were in there and being congratulated, he finally thought he should sit down, and that was okay. So when they didn't give him any hazing, he gave himself some hazing, I guess.
It's a smart move to ingratiate yourself to the teammates. Incidentally, I love how remarkably dysfunctional the Clippers are. Right now, basically the go-to story for the Clippers is that Blake Griffin, their star, broke his hand fighting one of the equipment managers. And the first thing they do to welcome in a new player in a public setting is fake beat him in. And add that, by the way, when they played in Boston and it was Paul Pierce's return there, they fake stabbed him a bunch of times in front of the club. And again, I have no idea what the hell is going on there. Thank God I don't have to worry about it, but it is remarkably entertaining to me.
I was struck when we were in L.A. Austin Rivers is also out with a broken hand, and a reporter during the pregame tells Doc Rivers, "Hey, I just talked to Austin. He's feeling good. He's going to be back on the court here pretty soon." And Doc Rivers had no idea. His dad, his coach, had no idea where Austin Rivers was as far as his recovery. I thought that was remarkable.
I was going to ask you this later on. Might as well do it now. Obviously, the Warriors played the Clips since the last time we recorded. We'll jump into that game for a second. For now, let me know this. Is Blake with the team? That game was in Los Angeles. Was he there?
He was there. In fact, the team's official Twitter account was taking some posed pictures of Blake and the trainer sitting close to each other. One picture where it looked like they might give each other a high five. All is well in L.A.
Okay, all is well. I'll keep this personal, but I work in an office setting, and I obviously have friends here at the office. If two members of my office fought, in fact, two members of my office fought, and one of them broke their hand because he punched the guy in the face so many times, and generally speaking, we go out together and we're friends together, and now those two people continue to work in the same space and we see each other, no way it's not awkward for everybody. There's zero chance. I don't care how many pictures they take. I don't care how many times they say they don't care. There's no way you could be in that environment without it feeling remarkably awkward. Now, mix in the idea that there's been all these trade rumors that they're thinking about getting in Blake. I do not believe that it is not really tense and strange in that locker room anytime he's there.
And it's going to get even more awkward when the trainer sues him. That's going to make for some need for some real photos on Twitter.
Yeah, well, that's why you got to beat up the new guy.
Yeah, in front of everybody. Last Insiders Report, I'm going to go all the way back to one of the first episodes you and I recorded, Rusty. In fact, it was the first Insiders Report. And I think the Warriors are in Minnesota, and you get me all excited about a possible strip club story, and then you head fake me. And instead, you tell me a story about a movie that the coaches had set up for the players in the hotel.
It was Magic Mike.
Magic Mike. I gave you a little crap about it, and you said, I believe, look, when we're in Miami, I'll give you a strip club story. Well, I'm pretty sure you're driving out of Miami. They just played there last night. What's up, man? Time to pay the piper. Give me a strip club story.
Well, anybody who follows Draymond Green's Snapchat at 3 o'clock in the morning, can get their own strip club story. Obviously, he was out having fun, but I think it's a good example of just how corny this team is. When they go to Miami, most teams go out, have fun, go to the strip club, and Draymond Green did have fun. But the two captains stay in Augusta, Georgia, and play golf. This group is corny. They go to movies together, they get excited about free popcorn, and they play golf instead of going to strip club.
Wait, so let me make sure I heard that right. Was Draymond at a strip club the night before the Miami game, or after the victory he went out?
The morning before the shoot-around of the day of the game.
Oh, boy. Now we know why Whiteside got that KO.
Whatever. They won. They won the game. Everybody settled down. And we don't know that he was definitely at a strip club, right?
Was Sean Livingston there, too? Because that guy looked so sleepy and lethargic and disinterested last night.
How dare you ever say Sean Livingston was at a strip club?
I am so happy that you guys are finally disagreeing. I mean, this entire time, I feel like you guys have been like skipping arm in arm throughout the episode. I forgot why I tried to stop these three-man episodes. Let's move off, man, and let's jump into the Warriors' focus. Unfortunately, since the last time we recorded, the Warriors did pick up their fifth loss. It was kind of a shitburger loss to Portland. Certainly understandable. There's all the all-star rest, and they've shaken it off. They look great now. Here's my question about it. As a fan, this pursuit for the 73 wins has made what should be completely innocuous and who care about losses into big deals. You know, it's a regular season loss that means nothing, but I took it kind of hard because it may impede their search for history. Is that true for the players? Do they seemingly take this stuff hard, or are they smart enough to just move on and kind of keep an eye on the big picture?
They take it hard because a loss is one game closer than San Antonio is to the number one seed. And we've talked about how important that is, home court advantage, and also get to avoid either San Antonio or Oklahoma City. But that's where their thought process is right now. One, they're really competitive and they think they should go 8-0. Two, they want the number one seed really bad. Now, when they get close, when they get to 65 wins or so, they're going to start hunting 72 and 73. And so they'll take the losses hard for a different. But right now, it's all about that number one seed. Every time they lose, they got to look there and see the San Antonio's right by them.
The other thing that came out of that game, and I thought Kerr actually had a great quote about it, is that these guys take losing back-to-back games remarkably serious. They haven't for, I think, over a year. They lose to Portland. They play the Clips the next, I think, 2 days afterwards. Was there a sense of urgency before that game? I mean, what is the we're not going to lose back-to-back a battle cry for them?
Yeah, it's one of the two tangible goals that the Warriors have set. They didn't really set a win total. They didn't, other than winning a championship, they didn't really set anything about winning the Pacific Division or being the number one seed. But one of their tangible goals was not to lose back-to-back consecutive games. They take that seriously. They take their resiliency, their ability to respond very seriously. And it's almost an automatic now. When they lose, you expect that they're not only going to win one, they're going to reel off an 8- or 10-game winning streak right after.
That's such a strange goal to me that was one that they actually set. I mean, obviously you don't want to lose back-to-back games, but to make it something that is like a concrete goal versus, I don't know, winning the championship or the Pacific Division title, that's strange to me. What is it about the back-to-back that they think is so important?
That's a swagger-filled goal, too. I mean, that is a very confident assertion in a league that forces you to play 82 games and sometimes, you know, what, 4 games in 5 nights. I love the balls that it takes to have that goal.
Yeah, and I think they're taking it one step further. If you never lose consecutive games, you can't lose a 7-game series. And I think that's what they were looking at. Is last year, they went through the whole year without losing 3 in a row, and that ended up meaning a lot to them in the playoffs. Twice they were down 2-1, and they kept quoting that stat. We've never lost 3 in a row. We're going to turn this around. And now they've taken it one step further. If you never lose consecutive games, there's no way for you to lose in the playoffs.
Is it weird that I'm constantly worried you're going to, like, swerve off the road or something? I'm the one who's more distracted than you're driving. Have you hit anybody while you've been talking to us, or so far no terrible traffic accidents?
A bunch of people I've noticed are, like, swerving around me. Some have fallen off of the turnpike altogether. I'm not sure if it's because of my driving or if everybody else is really that bad, but I haven't been arrested.
The camera pans out, and it turns out you're only driving 15 miles an hour on the freeway. You know, you're all distracted, and it is what it is. Do the worst.
I am currently going 47 on a 7-mile-an-hour highway.
Oh, well, that's entertaining. Although, never mistake any of my jokes or my questions as asking you to tell me exactly how fast you're going. I'm sure nobody really cares about that. What we may care about.
Watch the analytics on this. The listener is going to spike right when I start talking about going 47 miles an hour. That is what people are into.
Are you surprised that Scott didn't jump on and goes, oh, I did a bunch of research, actually, and that's exactly what they want to know. Nicely done, Rusty. I'm going to ask you this question, come hell or high water. Are the Clippers still a rival? I mean, there was a period of time where these guys were the go-to rival for us. Now, with the Warriors' success, I'm not sure that's true. How did the team look at them?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still so much dislike between the players that there probably is some rivalry. But to me, the rivals are now Oklahoma City and San Antonio. I think right. The Warriors match up so well with the Clippers that it's a given when they play them that they're going to win. Even this year, they were down 23 at L.A., and there was no panic. They were like, yeah, whenever we want to turn it on, we'll beat you guys. They're nothing. And it's kind of the opposite of way things have been against the Warriors for so many teams that they wanted to be rivals against the team, but they just weren't good enough. And now it's vice versa. I don't think the Clippers are in the same class as those top three, as the Warriors, the Spurs, and Oklahoma City. And, look, the Warriors have played just as many playoff series against the Spurs as they have the Clippers, so to me, that's more of a rivalry.
Hey, Rushy, exactly how fast are you going right now?
I'm up to 48 now. Just an update on my travel. 48 miles an hour. Currently.
Appreciate that. You probably didn't see this because you're at the game live. Scotty, did you watch the Clipper game?
Yes, I did.
Did you see that ABC lit up the three-point line?
Unfortunately, I did see that because it was so annoying, and they need to stop immediately.
So, Rusty, if you didn't see it, you may remember I don't remember what network it was, but for a minute in hockey, they decided that fans couldn't see the puck, so they added like a neon line behind it, and it looked ridiculous. ABC is doing something similar for their Saturday night games. Every time a player took a three-pointer, they lit up the three-point line in this big neon red light. I don't understand it. I was one of those people who couldn't see the puck in hockey, so I understand why they would do that. It didn't make me watch it, but there was some rationale. Are there people out there who can't see the three-point line? I mean, what the hell did they decide to do that for? That they need to consider other methods. It made it look like NBA jams or something. Like, at some point, they're going to start lighting up the ball. It was totally ridiculous. Give me another insider's take, Rusty, and this is the last Clippers question. I've always had kind of a hair up my butt about J.J. Redick. I think he looks like a Disney bully. Looks kind of like an asshole. Is he, or am I just making up a personality for no reason?
Yeah, I think you're making up a personality. I think he relates to a lot of different genres. Obviously, he's from Duke. Now he's all tatted up. He's a guy who works about as hard as anybody in the league. He's a guy who came into the league as nothing but a shooter and has turned himself into a pretty good all-around player. If you're going to pick on a Clipper, I think you picked the wrong one.
Yeah, I felt so similar to Bram, and then I heard J.J. Redick on a podcast, and he was like extremely like a very nice guy, well-spoken, seems to work hard, like a young father who cares about his kid. Like, I was like, oh man, I actually like this guy now. This is terrible.
Thank God I haven't listened to that podcast. The podcast is probably called Highway Speeds with J.J. Redick. You know, it's just remarkably entertaining. Last night featured marquee performances from both the Splash Brothers. Steph looked amazing. Clay looked amazing. I got a question about each. Let's start with Steph. Steph has reached a point now where every game features at least a couple of plays where you just have to chuckle and just shake your head. I mean, they're just unbelievable. The one that sticks out of my head from this last week was the bomb he hit against Atlanta, then turns around in the middle of their bench and shimmy dances, seemingly right in Kent Bazemore's face. There's been a little talk about that now. People are asking whether or not it was disrespectful. What do you guys think? Was it, one, do you remember the play? Two, if you do, was that a nasty move by him?
Yes, Stephen Curry was very disrespectful.
Do you believe that, really?
Yeah, no, I think he's disrespectful all the time.
keep dancing in the semis and does this all the time. If I was playing against them, I would not allow that. And I understand that the latest one was the Atlanta Hawks were in his ear while he was shooting it, and he did it to one of his best friends in the league, Kent Bazemore. So this probably isn't the one to jump on, but just consistently, I think that he celebrates and taunts way beyond anything that I would let an opposing player get away with.
Where's that coming from? Because you hear about Steph being such a humble guy, and he's so well-mannered, he doesn't curse. Is this influenced by Draymond? Is this something that Steph has been working on? I mean, why is he turning into this guy who just celebrates right in your face?
That's the one out that I would give him, is that it's not like he plans these dances. In fact, a lot of times they're so in the moment that when you ask him about him afterwards, he goes, "Oh no, what did I do?" And you have to show him a video of the celebration. So it's not like he's plotting this behavior out. I think it's two things. One, he does play with great joy, and that comes out. That oozes out in celebrations and dancing. And two, I think that he does. He feeds off the crowd. He feeds off his teammates. I think that's part of who they are, is that they've got this confidence that has been imbued in them, and that plays out in how they play and how they react to how they play. But like I say, I don't think that he's doing this stuff on purpose to taunt people. I think it just comes out. But that doesn't mean that if I'm an opposing player, I wouldn't clothesline him at some point.
I mean, that dance specifically, that shoulder shimmy, and it kills me to say this, but it always reminds me of Mark Jackson. You know, I mean, I think I remember him starting that in the Denver playoff series. And, you know, he hit a three or something, did the Mark Jackson kind of shoulder shake, and then it seemingly kind of transitioned from there. That I've always kind of thought that was the seed point for it. Second thing, was it disrespectful? Hell yes. I mean, dancing in general, just like you guys are saying, obviously disrespectful. That fool was on the Hawks bench. If he was sitting on the coach's lap, he wouldn't have been any closer to their huddle. So, I mean, if anything is disrespectful in an NBA game, that certainly was disrespectful.
It also was a shot that, I don't know, maybe, I don't even know if the Warriors had the lead at that point. I mean, it was a great shot. It was a tough shot, but I don't think, it wasn't like the game winner or any type of shot that I think should be celebrated.
It was a big shot, and it was a tough one. I mean, it was a super, super difficult shot, but, you know, nonetheless, it may have been a little bit ugly. As a person who's supporting him, I love it. That leads to my question about Klay Thompson, a little bit less analytical. I was listening to an interview of Andrew Bogut today on the Bill Simmons podcast, a pod I generally enjoy, and a co-SeatGeek sponsor, and out of nowhere, Bogut referred to Klay as Smokey and then Big Smokey. He did it twice. It was important that get out. Is that a nickname that's used for Klay Thompson?
I've never heard anybody call him that, but I certainly could understand why one would call him Smoke.
Do you care to explain that, or just want to leave it to our imagination?
Well, I think he's got this demeanor about himself that makes him seem somewhat aloof, somewhat out of it. He likes to go hang out on the beach with his dog and
and smoke cigarettes, right? You know,
there's some smells that come from those dog parks sometimes that would make you believe that some sort of smoking was going on. He spent a lot of his childhood in Portland, where it's legal to smoke certain things. So yeah, I could understand why somebody would call him smoke.
Do you think he'd be upset that Bogut threw him out there on a big national podcast like that?
Also, let the record reflect, I am smiling from ear to ear on this topic. But yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm guessing that. And I'm going to have to find out now what it is. I'm guessing that Klay has done something wrong. Andrew Bogut is very calculated with his public demeaning of other players. And usually when he really goes after his good friend HB, it's because Harrison has done something first. So I'm guessing that Klay has done something wrong to Andrew Bogut. It could be something as simple as jumping ahead of him in the shower line or stealing barbecue first after the game last night, but clearly something has happened for Andrew Bogut to go publicly and call Klay Thompson smoking.
We'll leave that to you. You now have two assignments from the huddle, man. We still haven't heard about the cyst on Mo's head. I'm sure you'll get back to us. Now find out how the hell...
I'm gonna need doctor help on that.
Obviously. We'll also find out how Big Smokey pissed off Bogut. We got to get that. Take us home with a story time from Uncle Rusty. What I'd love to hear about, if you got one, is Andy Verjo.
Well, I kind of gave you my favorite one, the guy waiting at the door for everybody to come home after the game in Atlanta. But I guess to me, a good story about the guy is that he represents where the Warriors are going. The three teams, that other teams that were going after him, were San Antonio, Oklahoma City, and Dallas. And I can't remember the last time that the Warriors won a bidding war against any of those three teams. And then when you think about that he signed for the veterans minimum, which obviously is the least amount that any of those teams could have offered, and he still wanted to come there, I think that speaks to volumes for where the Warriors are and the kind of relationships they have in the league. He's known Leandro Barbosa since he was 14 years old. He calls Luke Walton one of the best teammates he's ever had from their 1 year in Cleveland. So they've got a locker room now, an organization now that, when players are available, they're looking at the Warriors first.
Mr. Simmons, you are a professional. I'm very impressed. Boy, we stole your best story. I threw you a left curve on bringing his name up again, and you delivered. Nicely played. Huge fun, you guys. That's true every week, certainly true this week. Please remember, if you want to reach out to us, if you have any questions, takes, anything you want to make us aware of, you can hit us up on warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account remains at Warriors Huddle. Rusty has a Twitter account he won't tell you about, but if you're lucky enough to actually know the handle, you just might be able to get updates on his highway speeds. Our website is warriorsworld.net, and the sponsor of the show remains SeatGeek. Please remember, download their app, and if you do, hop into the settings tab and put in the promo code GSW. It'll help you out, and it'll help us out. We really appreciate it. Go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Drive slow, homie. Drive slow, homie. You never know, homie. Let me see, homie. You need to pump your brakes and drive slow, homie. My homie Molly, you stay.
Good, good.